Well, hello, Modern Mystics. Welcome to July's teaching call. I hope you guys are having an awesome summer wherever you are in the world. I hope you're continuing to practice and consider and investigate and integrate all of the things that we've been learning over the last many months. I also want to say that July is our year anniversary here at Modern Mystics. We've been operating for 12 months now, and I want to thank you all for being a part of membership, and for those of you who have been with me from the very beginning and who continue to stay members, it truly means the world to me that you've been with me from the very beginning. And for those of you who have joined us along the way, I hope that the lessons that you're learning and the understandings that you're starting to integrate are really serving and supporting you in your mystical journey. You know, part of the reason that I put Modern Mystics together was for a couple of reasons. First of all, I wanted there to be a resource for people who wanted deeper, richer, more authentic understanding as it relates to their spiritual practice, and had a place where they could go where it was sort of all in one place. I wanted to be able to do it to bring meaningful lessons in a timely way. You know, oftentimes the people who do leave membership, they don't leave because of the content. They'll leave because they say they don't have the time. And that's really unfortunate, because, you know, doing our spiritual work is really one of the most important gifts we can give to ourselves. And to really develop mastery of any skill, of any gift, of any talent, whether it's your mystical spiritual gifts, or if you were a lawyer or a doctor or a musician or an artist, mastery requires practice. So my goal with Modern Mystics is to be able to refine it in such a way that within a few hours a week, you're able to gather and gain really powerful tools to help support and guide you on your spiritual adventure. It's important to recognize as well that our spiritual adventure is not a straight shot. It's not a straight line. It operates in a spiral circle that continues to move us up and up and brings us back to our old ways of being, to show us how we've refined and how we've grown, or to show us where we still need to develop some mastery. That is definitely a strategy of the soul to bring us back to circumstances and situations that refine our perfection, that as mystics, we look at those circumstances, those situations, not as signs that we're attracting bad things or that we're doing something wrong, but as opportunities, as gifts from the soul to number one, to check in and see how far we've come, to number two, to be able to look at those dynamics and those circumstances and those situations that used to send us into the limitations of self, fear, judgment, worry, powerlessness. And they give us opportunities to sort of check in and say, huh, all right, who is responding to this situation? Is it myself, or am I coming from a perspective of my soul? And so I want to say happy birthday to Modern Mystics, and congratulations to those of you who have joined us along the path. And so for this month's teaching module, what I've done is I unearthed a series of videos that I did last year. It's a series of four videos called Activating Alchemy, and I put them together to promote a class I was teaching. But and then I just put them away. I never used them again. And I thought, as I was putting together this month's content, I thought, well, it seems so sad and so silly that those videos are just sitting there and not serving anybody. So I unpacked them, and I include them in this month's teaching module as further refinement and further reminders of our alchemical process, what's involved there, how we can use alchemy to shape and transform our money, our relationships with wealth is the second video. And the third video goes over the process of how to overcome polarity, and the fourth video takes you behind the scenes into my studio and talks about really engaging with source and the five gifts that engaging with source brings forward for us. And actually, as I was replaying the video, reviewing it, I noticed that I had left out a sixth I in the last video. The first five are inspiration, intention, imagination, innovation, and intuition. And the six is implementation, putting things to work, embodying things. And so in the last few months, we've been talking about the journey from self to soul and how it is a process of emerging out of the limits of polarity and settling and breaking apart those structures that have crafted and shaped us and being able to settle into the being, the doing, and the fellowship, that settling into that center point of peace and power at the center point of that cross in the circle of soul provides for us. And implementation allows us to start to embody, to become, to put those energies into action, those new ideas and ideals that we're cultivating through our mystical practice, to put them into work. Because as I've said to you guys before over and over again, you know that to just sit on your pillow and not do any work in the real world is useless. And really the true authentic refinement of mastery comes from the doing. Even if you fall on your face a few times, even if you feel like you're slipping backwards before you step forward, all of that action is a part of our growth. That implementation, that doing becomes embodiment, becomes growth, becomes a purification and further refinement that then leads us into our ability to truly and authentically transform. So I just wanted to add that as a side note that wasn't included in that final video there as a note. But what I wanted to do with, so I hope you enjoy those videos. They sort of serve as a little mini masterclass for this month. And take your time with them and just sort of reflect on them and look over them and go, yeah, I really see how I'm applying that. And over the last few months in membership, I see how I'm using that. And oh yes, I see how I can apply this understanding of how alchemy works in relationship to my money and these spiritual gifts, and just touch base. They're really meant for you as a reminder. That's really what I wanted to be able to do with this month's module, was just to sort of bring some tools and tips and reminders in to fine tune and refine the work. So that's sort of part one of the gifts, the happy anniversary gifts of this month. But then what I wanted to do with the teaching module this month is I'm doing what we're calling it's called soul strategies. That's what this teaching module is about. It's gifts from your soul. And what we're learning as we manage and navigate the pathway from self to soul, where we start to break apart the artificial limiting constructs of our lower self, the constructs of belief, attitude, perspectives that were given to us by the world around us, that we inherited from our families, that we were taught by our teachers, that we've adapted from, government and media. As those structures of self start to break apart and we gain more access to our soul energy, we start to realize and see that our entire life, the entire road, the entire mystical journey has been really a strategy of our soul. And we as mystics understand that self exists within polarity and soul emerges out of it. So that what we've discovered is that all of the things that we know about polarity have been presented to us in our life, that the light, the dark, the good, the bad, the up, the down, the shadow, the brightness, the masculine, the feminine, the positive, the negative, they've all been there to serve our ultimate growth. And so if we're able to look and understand, we realize that our entire life is being used by our soul to bring us home, to wake us up, to call us forward. And so the soul uses many, many strategies, many tricky strategies, and to do that, to call us forward out of our forgetful nature, where we believe that we exist at the whim of the created world. And it uses all sorts of strategies to wake us up, capture our attention, sometimes in painful ways, so that we can really start to look inside instead of outside. And remember that one of our mystical understandings is that the inner world, we know this as mystics, the inner world shapes our outer world. But all along the way, our soul is strategizing, using little tricks to wake us up, to capture our attention. And so that's what we're going to talk about in this teaching module here. If you remember in the olden days, a few years ago, the talk show host David Letterman on his show here in the States used to have, in every show, he used to have a top 10 list. And he'd have these really, you know, bizarre top 10 lists. And so we're going to do a top 10 list of the strategies, of soul strategies, the strategies that our soul uses and that it asks us to remember in order for us to refine, amplify, and generate and clarify and really accelerate our journey from self into soul. So we've got 10 strategies that we're going to talk about and how the soul uses them to initiate us, to move us forward on the mystical path. So strategy number one is moving into the invisible realm of the soul. And so the first strategy of the soul is to create situations to give us experience, which brings us into action, that pushes us beyond the boundaries of the physical, beyond the boundaries of the outer world, and calls us into a world where no amount of thinking or pushing or forcing can change circumstances. Strategy number one is to pull us into the invisible realm. And the realm of the soul is greater than the realm of the body. And it's greater than the realm of the mind. And it goes beyond all that we can see, smell, or touch. And yet, at the same time, it is all those things. And so the strategy of the soul oftentimes creates situations that sometimes involve discomfort or pain or confusion, but that are perfect in their ability to propel us further into who we're truly meant to be. Okay. And this realm of the soul is, there's no time, there's no space. It, in the world of the soul, healing can and does happen in an instant. But what this strategy does is our soul will, through the cooperation of ourself, because our soul uses ourself, absolutely. It's not, we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. But the soul will use the self to craft situations that force us to look inside ourselves for our power and causes us to awaken. And sometimes, as I say, those circumstances or situations can be really, really difficult. It might happen, you know, oftentimes people find that they have a dark night of the soul, or they have a, you know, an accident or an illness or a divorce or a career failure or a financial collapse. And it's in those moments where no amount of our thinking from ourself, no matter of, you know, trying to manipulate energy from ourself, no matter of, you know, trying to do the same stuff over and over again because it doesn't work. We notice that at that stage when this first strategy is activated, that it doesn't matter what we do from our limited nature, nothing shifts. And so when we're at that point, this strategy forces us to look inwards, to look inside for something else, for something deeper, for something more powerful, for something more poignant. So the first strategy of the soul that pushes us into the invisible realm uses every element of our life to ask us to do that. And really what's so poignant about the times that we're experiencing now, especially as it relates to politics and global crisis and climate change and environmental struggle. Now, as mystics, we understand that all of those things are a part of the polarity that is Earth. But what it's doing for many people is all of this weirdness on the planet and how distorted everything is waking people up to turn them to look in towards themselves for their power. And so that I want you to take some time to look at your life. And there's a wonderful quote from an author called Baruch Spinoza. And he says, do not weep, do not wax indignant, but understand. And so that's a really powerful quote for us to use as mystics, to be able to look at our life and go, huh, where was I pushed almost to a breaking point where I was asked to turn deep, deep inside? And when you can, as a mystic, when you don't cry about those things, when you're able to look at those things as strategies of the soul and say, aha, I see what was going on here. I see what was being asked of me here. I see that moment, now that I see it from a mystical perspective, I certainly didn't see it from a mystical perspective when it was happening to me, but I can see it from a mystical perspective now. And now I understand. So I don't need to be indignant about it. I don't need to cry about it. I can understand. And in that moment, when you understand what was going on there with your soul, all of the structures, the energies that have held that old pattern together start to break apart, and alchemy starts to kick in. So I encourage you to look into your life and make little notes and go, and especially at places that were challenging, and go, yeah, I see it there. There it is. There was my wake up call. Oh, there was another nudge from my soul. Oh, I see what was happening there. I get it. I get it. I get it. Okay. So that's soul strategy number one. Now, what I want you to be able to do here with these strategies is as we talk about them, is just to sort of reflect on your life and go, oh yeah, I see where that was activated. I see where that was working. Huh. I get it. Okay. All right. Strategy number two, adopting a divine perspective. Now, as modern mystics, we have a choice. We can adopt a perspective of self, which again is based in polarity, right, wrong, good, bad, positive or negative, good or evil, masculine or feminine, right? Which is a very material perspective. Remember that anything that is created by this from the self or through the self is material. Or we can make the choice of adopting a divine perspective, which is a perspective of the soul, which places us at that center point in the circle with the cross from a very powerful position point of power. And I want to make a really powerful distinction here, that this understanding of divine perspective, being able to place yourself at the center point of polarity, a divine perspective sits at the center point of polarity, right? The high priest, the high priestess sits between the black pillar and the white pillar, between the positive electrical charge and the negative electrical charge, between masculine and feminine, between spirit and matter. That's divine perspective. That's the divine viewpoint, that neutral place of peace and power that allows us to authentically see things from our soul, and then to be able to authentically take action from our soul. So strategy number two is adopting a divine perspective instead of a material one, and moving out of the perspective of self and into the perspective of soul. And this one decision, this one strategy, will make the difference between you moving forward into healing, transforming, growing, evolving, expanding so many of your tools. And in recent months, as we've started, you know, this series and moving from self to soul, you've probably already started to notice the difference of that position point and how vastly stable it is compared to the position point that we've been in recent years, where we're swinging back and forth into, you know, high vibratory bliss and love, etc. And there's another quote that I like that explains this strategy, and it is from the mystic Rumi. And Rumi says, out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I will meet you there. Right. So Rumi was a Sufi mystic. He was sort of the poetic Christ of Islam. And he understood that this field beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, the divine perspective is where true, authentic, mystical engagement and connection happens. The understanding that the world and everything in it is neutral. That the divine perception, the earth itself is polarized, but nature, spirit, God force is neutral. And being able to adopt and adapt this divine perspective gives us the ability, not through manipulation, but through authentic wisdom, to understand that perfection exists in all things in the universe, even when it's challenging, right? As mystics, where our ability to observe and become aware and see deeply underneath and inside situations, we're able to see what's going on there and to understand what is happening, right? We're able to see that there is benefit in the fire of the forest, and there's benefit in its regrowth. There is benefit in a fish wanting to swim and a bird wanting to fly, and that each of those things has its purpose. And we let go of the polarity that keeps us, keeps our energy kinked, keeps that energetic hose, the flow of source energy, blocked. And so as we start to adopt and adapt this divine perspective, we start to call in greater healing and greater transformation. But we're able to look at those situations not from the sort of impotent, manipulated version that people kind of look at and they go, oh, well, there are no accidents, and this was meant to happen, and the universe, this was the universe's destiny for me, but which is very powerless. There's no authentic power in that. But to be able to look at it and go, all right, I know there is meaning here and purpose here. What is it? A lot of people in the New Age spiritual practice will say, well, I know this happened for a reason. And then they just leave it. They don't say, what is it? And they don't use their alchemical tool of vision to go in and see what is really the reason, what's going on here. They'll just leave that query at the door. And so no growth or advancement happens. And so as you start to consciously adapt and adopt this divine perspective that sits at the intersection of peace and power, masculine and feminine, light and dark, matter and spirit, the doorway through which all of your spiritual energy, all of the information through which source energy can flow, starts to become more available to you. All right. So that's strategy number two. Strategy number three is recognizing the divine equation. And so the divine equation, if you want to move in a different direction, you have to be looking in a different direction, right? If you want to become more evolved, if you want to become a greater, more powerful mystic, if you want to become a more abundant person with money, if you want to become more healthy, you have to be looking in the direction of that choice. You have to be able to, if you want to move in that direction, you have to choose to move in that direction. And you have to look in that direction, and then have to focus your attention and your awareness in that direction. And your ability to look and choose and declare is what we would call perspective. And when you combine perspective with the position point of your power, the position point of soul at that intersection of soul and self, if you combine that with your belief and your knowing that you are that divine point of power. So the equation is perspective plus belief equals reality. So let me just say that again. The recognizing the divine equation. The divine equation is perspective plus belief equals reality. So your perspective is, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? What am I going to choose? What do I want to create? What is my goal? Your belief is, who am I in this equation? And as mystics, we claim our identity as being one with the creative force of the universe. We are one with that force. We're not separate from it. We're not less than it. We are a part of it. We have access to all of its tools and attributes. And with those two aspects of the equation in line, that starts to shape our reality. Remember that as mystics, we understand inner world shapes our outer world. Perspective plus belief, where we are going plus who we believe we are, is our inner world, shapes our outer world. So the reality of your personal space, your personal life, the world you live in, the state of your health and finances, the conditions of your relationships, the community. Remember that as we start to do our self to soul work, where we're working on our being, our doing, and our community, our being is that belief. Who are we being? Who do we believe ourselves to be? And where do we want that being nature to take us? How do we want it to shape our world? So I want you to consider the divine equation of this story. Perspective plus belief equals reality. And a really poignant story of that is an example, and I've used this example a couple of times in the past, is the example of two men standing at the side of the ocean. And the ocean is doing what it does. It's crashing and the waves are crashing and the surf is large. And one man is standing at the edge of the ocean and he's really, really excited and he's happy and he's exuberant. He's really thrilled. And the other man standing next to him is absolutely terrified. He's, you know, convinced he's going to die. He's having an anxiety attack. He's glued to his position on the sand. And the only difference between these two men is this divine equation, perspective plus belief equals reality. The one man is a swimmer. The one man who is excited and exuberant, and he's a surfer and he loves the water, and in that water, he is powerful and he is a partner with the ocean, and it takes him to wonderful places and it causes him to have spiritual experiences. So for that man standing on the side of the ocean, that experience is one of great bliss because his perspective and his belief is in alignment and so thus supports him. The other man who stands at the side of the ocean, who is having a panic attack, an anxiety attack, and is getting ready to drop dead because he's in such stress, he doesn't swim. He can't swim. He doesn't know how to swim. He fears the water. He feels he's powerless to it. And it can and will destroy him. He feels that he does not have the ability to function within that dynamic. And so to him, that experience is deadly and destructive. The ocean is just the ocean. It's doing what it's doing. It's doing the exact same thing at the exact same time for both of those people, but creating two very different outcomes based on that equation of perspective plus belief equals reality. It's one ocean, it's two men, it's two experiences. The only thing that makes the difference in the lives of those two people is perspective plus belief equals reality. And the reality of it is they don't even need to step into the water for their lives to be transformed. Their bodies, their emotions, their realities reflect it. What they believe and what they perceive without them even dipping a toe in the water. So I want you to really start to examine as we continue to refine this path of self to soul is looking at your divine equation. Where do you want to go? What kind of mastery do you want to achieve? And what do you believe about your being nature that will that support you? Okay. So, and that brings us actually to strategy number four, is to discover what it is that you truly believe. What do you truly believe? And the quote that I like to use for this strategy is from the Gospel of Thomas, another Gnostic mystic. And Thomas says, "If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, What you do not bring forth will destroy you. That is the Gospel of Thomas. Let me just say that again. If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. This relates to our work as mystics to do our shadow work and to really look at what our shadows, what energies our shadows are carrying, what attitudes our shadows are carrying, what beliefs our shadows are carrying, because those beliefs and attitudes and perspectives are reflected all around us, right? We're beginning to know this very intimately as mystics, aren't we? Inner world shapes outer world. And so we have conscious beliefs, things that are very, you know, very obvious for us that we participate in every day that, you know, that support us. But we have lots of unconscious beliefs. And how you start to, and because these subconscious beliefs are deeply hidden, we have to do our mystical work. And so this is why our alchemical work is so important. So that when we have an experience, when our soul is strategizing by bringing an experience to us, as mystics, what do? We stop. We become aware. We position ourselves in that center point of peace and power. And we really start to become scientists of our life. And we start to look at and sense and feel the underlying energies that exist around any given circumstance, positive or negative, good or bad. And as investigators, as mystical adventurers, we look deep into those circumstances, those scenarios and situations. And we first observe. We observe from that neutral place. And we ask ourselves, what is the underlying energy that's going on here? What energy do I feel? What that is at the root of this scenario or situation in my life? Is it powerlessness? Is it worry? Is it fear? Is it anxiety? Or on the other side of the scale, is it love? Is it peace? Is it creativity? Is it joy? And then we ask ourselves, all right, that's the underlying energy. What? And then we ask ourselves a really important question. We ask ourselves, what is the thought I'm having right now that is creating or that is being activated or energized by this scenario? And we really investigate the thoughts that exist at the base of that situation. And then we say, as we start to identify that truth, then we get to go, huh, all right, so I might be telling myself, oh, this is bad, this is wrong, I'm not capable of this. If you're wanting to ask for a raise, my boss is never going to give me a raise. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm too old, whatever it is. And we start to look at that and then we challenge that and we say, huh, all right, there's a thought that's rolling around there. Is it the truth? Is that something that is coming from myself or is that coming from my soul? And if there's any kind of limitation or constriction, we'll know that it is coming from ourself. Because when guidance and information and wisdom is coming from our soul, it will feel expansive. It will feel open and clear and neutral and powerful. When it's a restriction of limitation, it will feel tight and constricted. Just like the example of the two men standing on the beach looking at the ocean, when one was coming from the place of constriction, he lost all power. When one was coming from a place of expansion, he had greater access to higher degrees and realms of energy. So learning what our beliefs are is something that it doesn't need to be a huge challenge. We can use our day-to-day life. We don't have to go into years and years of therapy. We don't have to go into, we don't have to go to a, you know, hypnotherapist to find what they are. You just need to look at your life. So I always say to people, they say, well, I don't know what my subconscious beliefs are. I say, yeah, well, all you need to do is look at your life, look at your body, look at your health, look at your bank account, look at your relationship, look at the shape of your being, you're doing and your community as it relates to, you know, our initiatory path, our mystical path. And those things will show you. They will reveal to you what you believe. And so then when you have these discoveries, when you look and you say, what are the underlying energies that are existing here? What is the thought that is driving those underlying energies? Is that thought true? Does it come from myself, my limited perspective, or does it come from my soul, my expanded perspective? And chances are good, if it's causing me to shut down, that it's coming from myself. And if it is, I get to decide at that moment if I want to keep that belief or if I want to dump it. And if you want to dump it, then you can simply say, I choose to release this. I choose to turn it over to my higher self. You really, really witness it. You use your alchemical processes to transmute it from something from restriction into something of flow. And then you turn it over to your soul and it transforms. So that is strategy number 4. And another quote from Rumi. He says, all truths are easy to understand once they are discovered. The point is to discover them. So in order for us to do this work, we have to become our own investigators and dig deep within ourselves to find what we believe. It is like a literal treasure chest. It's like hunting for hidden treasure. And it becomes something that's really fun. At first, it's a little challenging because it's not something that we're trained or conditioned to do. But once you start to do it on a regular basis, you're able to unleash and release these beliefs more and more rapidly. And here's what's kind of cool about that, is that once you release and unblock the limited beliefs, you do not need to dive in right away to replace it with another belief. You can allow the flow of your soul to start to shape those new beliefs through its organic structure, right? Your soul knows itself to be abundant, powerful, whole, perfect, creative, evolved, etc. It knows itself to be that. It doesn't believe it. It knows it. And so as we clear these old structures of belief out of the way and the soul starts to come online more profoundly, it starts to then guide us through a greater knowing, and then that greater knowing of what it is and what it's capable of, as the soul starts to influence our subconscious mind, our self, our child nature, and automatically refine it, which is really cool, which lets us off the hook about having to really be forceful in implementing a new belief system, because the soul doesn't believe. The soul knows, and that's what we want. Because a belief is, you know, it can be changed. A belief is a thought that is accepted as real or true, right? It's accepted as a thought that's accepted as real or true. The soul knows. It just knows what it's capable of. Right? So strategy number 5. Is accepting an energetic responsibility. And the quote that goes with this strategy is from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and it is, what lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So as we start to accept an energetic responsibility, you know, as mystics who are growing in power, our ability to accept energetic responsibility becomes something that we really start to value. Now, when you're new on the mystical path, this idea of accepting energetic responsibility can be a little bit daunting because, and this is where sort of the naysayers of sort of mystical study that says, you know, inner world shapes outer world. They say, well, then you're making everybody a victim. You know, somebody gets into a car accident, you're making them the victim. Or somebody gets cancer, you're making them the victim. You're, you know, somebody gets assaulted, you're making them the victim. And that's not, if you're not truly grounded in the mystical understandings that we've been developing and concentrating on and firmly rooted in your peace and power, then yes, accepting energetic responsibility could feel daunting, could feel threatening, be like, man, I would hate to think that I put myself in that position if something bad is happening to me. But as mystics, we want that responsibility. And here's why. Because if we start to adapt and accept energetic responsibility, then guess what? All of our power from the external world comes racing back to us. Okay, so as mystics, we say, my inner world shapes my outer world. That is an energetic responsibility. We say, my beliefs and my perceptions, that affects my reality. That's an energetic responsibility. Sitting in the position point of peace and power, at that center point, at the cross, at the intersection of matter and spirit, masculine and feminine, when we deliberately place ourselves in that position point, that is accepting energetic responsibility. And so as we start to continue to refine that, we start to say, oh, if I can really maintain and refine and master these ideas, then my ability to accept energetic responsibility becomes a great joy. Then I realize that nothing outside of me has the ability to knock me off of my position point of power or peace. That no word, no scenario, no circumstance, no outer condition can diminish my sense of well-being. And then second to that is, if I know I'm in this position point of power and peace and I accept that energetic responsibility, then I know that eventually over time, my outer world is going to start to reflect my acceptance of that energetic responsibility. So this strategy of accepting energetic responsibility becomes an honor and a privilege. And a mystic wears that responsibility with great pride and great strength and great sovereign awareness. There's no victimization in it anymore because we understand so much more beyond the superficial, out of context idea of the law of attraction that puts people in victim states to say, well, I'm not going to accept energetic responsibility because this shit happened in my life and I, you know, I wouldn't attract that. So this energetic responsibility is a true gift from the soul and is one of the most powerful strategies that a mystic can use. All right. So strategy number six is giving limitless compassion. Now, limitless compassion comes from our ability to sit at that position point of at the neutral point of polarity and to be able to look at every dynamic, every circumstance, every situation from that divine perspective, especially as it relates to ourselves. And compassion in this state is really, for us, a more refined word of compassion would be to be able to use the word compassion as an alchemical tool. And the quote here that applies to this idea of compassion, again, is from the Sufi mystic Rumi that says, "Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers you have built against it." And so that's what we're doing as we cultivate, as we refine what our beliefs are, as we work with perceptions, as we position ourselves in that position point of power, that compassion becomes activated when we use our alchemical tool of awareness and we bring that witnessing awareness of our higher consciousness to any circumstance or situation. And through that witnessing awareness, this idea of compassion starts to flow because when we are in witnessing awareness, when we are watching and observing, to apply that first alchemical tool, without judgment, without labeling something as right or wrong, good or bad, without shifting into polarity, then compassion is a natural byproduct of the flow of that higher level of consciousness. It's not something that we need, again, to manipulate. It is a natural byproduct. And compassion is deep, deep connection. Compassion is deep empathy. Compassion is deep awareness. Compassion is deep engagement. Compassion is deep transformative energy. Compassion is a higher, more refined, evolved energetic flow that flows authentically from the soul, right? This is the energy that is able to look at the structures or the actions or the behaviors that might be being exhibited by the self and have absolutely no judgment around it, but is able to simply hold, witness, and observe what is going on there. As I said before, what is the underlying energy? What is the thought that cultivates and crafts this? Is it the truth? Do I want to hold on to it? No, I don't. Let's let it go. That's compassion, right? There's no judgment in it. It's just transmutation, transformation of the highest order. So again, being able to look at the history, the trajectory of your past, all of the little things or big things that occurred to you in your life, and be able to look at it from the mystical alchemical perspective and bring in this higher awareness of observation and look at it, automatically activates that frequency, if you will, of compassion, which starts to break them apart. The limited idea of compassion is that you're being compassionate, meaning you're feeling sorry for something, or you're being sympathetic about it, or you feel bad for this scenario, but you say, you know, this must be happening for a reason. That's the limited version of compassion. The soul-based version of compassion is this higher transmutative, empathetic, merging energy that allows the refined frequencies of soul and source then to come into any dynamic, any personality, any situation, any health condition, and begin to alter it. So that is strategy number 6, the gift of compassion. So strategy number 7 is understanding the gift inside of our emotions. And again, this is all about our alchemical work, right? This is all about being able to use what is sitting in front of us, as opposed to, you know, the law of attraction that says if you're having a bad emotion or a negative emotion, you've got to shut it down and you've got to swing to the other polarity. And that's simply not true. As mystics, we understand that. So if we're having an experience in our day, even as gifted mystics, where emotions of sadness or worry or fear or powerlessness come up, as mystics, we dive into those emotions and we use them, because our emotions hold within them a golden opportunity that, if we know how to use them, unlocks so much power and reveals so much energy that's been trapped and stuck, and that gets even further trapped and stuck if we use the law of attraction, vibrating high, to use spiritual bypass or denial to pretend that they're not there. And so many people do deny our emotions, but as mystics, we start to partner with them because we understand that there are gifts in them. And ultimately what that leads us to is that if those emotions are not given a noble and honorable flow, compassionate flow, alchemical pathway through which to move, they'll get trapped. They'll get stuck in the body. They'll create, you know, bad habits, behaviors. They'll, you know, shape addictions. They'll shape all sorts of things that we don't want them to shape. And so if we don't know how to look inside the gift of our emotions, they'll get stuck inside of us and they'll cause all sorts of problems, because they're carried then within the subconscious mind, the child mind. And because the child mind is creative, they will do whatever they need to do to project themselves outward. And so here's another lovely quote that says the soul would have no rainbow if the eyes had no tears. This is a Native American proverb. So our emotions are a hidden key. And, you know, our soul, like I said, it strategizes. It tries to get our attention over and over and over again using emotions, using circumstances in our life. But so few people know how to really use the emotions. And so they just build up and they build up until our world crashes, right? We'll get little, I think somebody said, you know, the universe will throw tiny pebbles at you. And if you don't pay attention, eventually it'll throw a brick at your head. And so when it comes down to it, our emotions are very powerful, beautiful, energetic resources. So again, using the idea of our alchemical work, is the hidden key is when, if we start looking at our emotions, if they're acknowledged, if they're honored, if they're looked at, if they're investigated, if they're inquired about, then it leads us to the things that we believe about ourselves, our thoughts that we have about ourselves. Like I said, so when you can start to investigate the emotion by not being run by it. So the difference between a mystic, somebody who's awake in their power and not in their power, is when an emotion comes up, when a circumstance comes up, a mystic is able to catch it. And how a mystic is really good at catching it is because you've done so much training and you're engaging with source and putting yourself in that position point of power and peace, that as you've practiced being in that position point of balance and power and order, that when you slip out now through this practice, you're able to catch it. You're like, oh, wait, I've slipped out. How do I know I've slipped out? Because I'm feeling something that feels really off. And instead of shutting it down, we go in and we investigate it. So if you watch and observe, what you'll notice is if you ask those questions, what is the emotion here? What is the underlying energy? What is the thought that's driving this? The emotion will lead you to a thought. The thought will lead you to a belief. And the tears or the anger or the anxiety, whatever the thing that you're feeling in your body is a reflection of that emotion. All of that is created by a thought, and all of that is created by a belief. So whenever you sense or feel an emotion coming up, particularly one that's, you know, feels negative or limiting or constrictive, do this treasure chest. Look at the emotion. Ask where it leads you as it relates to a thought. First of all, you'll feel it in your body. You'll have a sensation. You'll have a sensation. You'll want to cry, or you'll be anxious, or your heart will race, your tummy will hurt. You'll feel a pain in your back. And you can do this with anything, any bodily sensation. And you go to the body first, and then you find the emotion that underlies it. And then that emotion will lead you to a thought. That thought will lead you to a belief. And then you ask, is it true? Then you can choose to keep it or choose to dump it. So as you follow the trail of emotion, it leads you to belief, and then it leads you to an understanding of compassion, which allows you then to use the process of alchemy to transform it, to really witness it, and to really then use the power of your superconscious mind, the Father, the Divine Father, the source energy, to partner with your soul to release that energy. And so again, the process of that is you look at it, you ask, what is the underlying energy? What is the emotion here? What is the thought that runs that? What is the belief? Is it true? Do I want to keep it? Does it come from myself or my soul? If I want to let it go, then I say, I choose to let this go. I choose to release this thought. And I do release it. I release it to my highest self, that it be converted and transmuted into energy. And because the subconscious mind is the child, the conscious mind is the mother, the superconscious mind is the father. We want all three of those levels of ourselves to agree, to say yes. And so in that moment where the conscious mind has said, let's let this go, the subconscious mind says, okay, we'll let it go. And the father says, yes, I'll take it. Let's let it go. Then all three of those levels of mind have agreed, have said yes. And yes, when all three levels have said yes, that's when transformation happens. And so that's the gift of emotions, right? So when you start to challenge the things that are carried in the emotions, you'll start to be, you will be led to the authentic truth of your soul, the authentic truth of your soul. Okay, so that was strategy number 7. Okay, strategy number 8 is creating peace. Now, you know by now, with all of our mystical practices, and if you've taken an intuition class with me, any kind of alchemical class, that the very first place we always start is from that position point of coherence, that position point of peace. And that is where we always begin. That is really, you know, the position point of all of our power. It's interesting that, you know, the great mystical teachers, you know, Buddha and Rumi and Jesus and many others around, many others throughout history, you know, Jesus was known as the Prince of Peace. And Buddha, he has some fabulous Indian name that I could never in a million years pronounce, but the meaning of his name too was essentially the Prince of Peace and Compassion. And I'm always struck by that, these great mystical teachers, that was where they were always situated. And we as mystics who place ourselves at that crossroads of peace and power as the high priest or the high priestess, our position point is peace. The position point of all of our power is peace. It gives us the ability to access so many realms of power and clarity and insight and wisdom and energy and creativity. And so I always used to sort of think, isn't that interesting? I never ever heard Jesus or Buddha or Rumi or any of those real high adept spiritual masters talk about vibrating high or thinking positively. They always talked about peace. And their stories, you know, Jesus as the high mystic, his soul, his story put him at the position point of the center point of the cross, balanced between polarities. Buddha was the same thing, seated under the Bodhi tree at the position point at the balanced intersection of polarities. Their power was peace. And so we as mystics, our soul strategizes with us, especially in turbulent times, that when we are really aware, when we are really in our power, when we are really cognizant, when we are really conscious, that we're able to really powerfully, poignantly, and precisely recognize when we are in that position point of peace and when we're not. And it gets easier and easier and easier to notice when we slip out. And when we are in peace, our ability to access those three levels of mind and direct them, the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, superconscious mind, and partner with them, when all levels of our being come online to serve us, then our ability to access the resources of soul and source are far more readily available to us. So as this strategy is, you know, and you're already starting to notice it, when am I coming from self? When am I coming from soul? Am I in a place of peace? Am I not in a place of peace? And this power becomes more refined. And the more often, the more consistently you stay in that position point, then the gifts of your soul, abundance, wisdom, guidance, support, love, creativity, direction, synchronicity, being in the wisdom stream of that source energy that supports the planets, the galaxies, every cell in your body, you're able to more deliberately and authentically and at will partner with that wisdom. So that's why the strategy of creating peace is so important. Strategy number 9 is letting go of the rope. Now, letting go of the rope is, I want you to think of the idea of a like a game of tug of war. And this too is an idea of polarity. You know, the idea of this idea of tug of war, right? You stand on one end of the rope and somebody else stands on the other end. You're attached to your point of view, your opinions, your feelings, your versions of right and wrong, your versions of good and bad, your versions of how other people should be living your life, their life, how the world should be. And everybody else on the planet is standing on the other side of the rope. And everybody is pulling the rope, right? And so nothing moves. This is why transformation doesn't happen. This is why people who go into wanting to change the world, you know, foisting their opinions on others or to change other people's behavior by insisting that they're doing things wrong, nothing ever changes because it can't, because people are coming at it from opposing ends. They're holding onto the rope. And so both ends are committed to their position and they're pulling with every ounce of their energy so that they can gain an inch in their position. But nothing moves, nothing shifts. And think of how much valuable energy is wasted. Just imagine a game of tug of war, right? People on either sides of polarity, right and wrong, good or bad, Democrat, Republican, vegetarian, meat eater, pro-choice, pro-life, gun carrier, you know, pro-gun, anti-gun, whatever it is, gay, straight, climate denier, climate change believer, whatever it is, two people, you know, those two groups, those two entities stand at the end of the rope, and just think of how much energy is being used, how much energy is being wasted. Nothing moves, and all of the energy that could be used to authentically gain access to soul, to transform health, to transform wealth, to create new things, new dynamics, is completely blocked. But what happens when one side of that tug of war decides to let go of the rope? What is the dynamic that occurs when there's no longer any resistance or attachment to the circumstances or the occurrences that are involved? What happens when you swing into that center point of peace and power? That's letting go of the rope. In that moment, everything changes. And the energy that was being used to maintain the tug of war, it collapses and completely crumbles to the ground in a massive heap, right? Just imagine that, playing tug of war. You're playing tug of war with your friend and nothing is moving, nothing is moving, nothing is moving, and you let go of the rope. What happens? The person on the other side of the rope, they crash to the ground, the battle is over, and now you have access to all of that energy that was being used to keep that structure in place. And the only way that that battle can be continued is if both sides of the fight decide to pick up the rope again. Because you can't have a tug of war with only one side pulling. And so you, in whatever it is that you're working on and trying to transform and reshape in your life that's causing you to feel stuck or frustrated, you know, bring that scenario into your mind. Let's say it's a financial situation that you're frustrated by. Bring that financial situation and scenario into your mind and really look at it. And look at all of the energy that is swinging around it without judgment, without judgment. And, you know, maybe it's worry and frustration, anxiety and, you know, all of those things that get tied up in frustration and financial situation. And just look at it and really witness it and do the alchemical work on it and then just let it go. This is what I mean by turning it over. When you turn it over to your higher self, when you choose to let it go, that's what you're doing. You're releasing it and you're letting go of the rope. And this letting go of the rope, this is what is meant by authentic forgiveness. When you let it go and you go through this alchemical process of doing the work of understanding what the emotions are, understanding what the beliefs, the thoughts, the energies, are they true? Do you want to keep them? Are they coming from self and soul? And then if you want to really let them go and you turn them over to your highest self, that's what authentic forgiveness is. That's what authentic forgiveness is. And so how do you do that? You decide to make a choice. You say, I am going to let go of this. I do not need it anymore. It served me. That belief system, that scenario, that situation, it served me for a while. It was beneficial for me for a while, but it doesn't serve me anymore. I don't need it. And so I'm going to let it go. And I forgive myself and have compassion for myself for staying attached and holding on to it for so long, but I'm ready to let it go. And so you take a deep breath. You open your hands, you let go of the rope, you surrender that belief, you turn it over to your higher self. And it's a very simple action, but it's breathtaking in its power, because in that moment, all of the energy that was used to hold that construct into shape, in form, is now returned to you so that you can use, so that your life becomes lighter, you become more spiritualized, your money becomes more spiritualized, your body becomes more spiritualized, your relationships become more spiritualized. There's no more resistance around whatever that scenario is, and so energy is allowed to flow. And again, you don't need to insert anything new in there. You've just unkinked the energetic hose of source energy, and it will do what it needs to do to spiritualize your money or your health or your wealth, because that is its nature. Okay. You know, so just look at your life and say, well, where am I holding on to stuff? Where am I holding on to a rope? Where am I playing a tug of war with some person or some business or something, a government or a scenario or a group of people? And am I willing to let it go? My family, my friends, my bank account, my boss. And can I let it go? Am I willing to do that? And then choose to do it. Strategy number 10, this is the final strategy, is reclaiming your power. And really, at the root of all of our mystical work, reclaiming our power is what this is all about. It's remembering and reclaiming who we really are as divine beings who, through a very powerful and distracting illusion called reality, we've forgotten who we are. We've forgotten our true power. We've forgotten that we are, in fact, not just a physical skin suit with the personality that is Amy and Allie or Brian or Christopher or Susan, but that we are this timeless, ageless, limitless energetic being that doesn't really even have a name. And as mystics, that's the path we are walking, to return to that remembering of our power. And so strategy number 10 of reclaiming our power is a really crucial strategy, because as mystics, we start to reclaim our power from the creative world. Again, we understand that our internal world is what has causative power. Causative. It works at cause. The external world is an effect, and as a result, it has no creative power. And so as mystics, we start to call all of our power back from the world that we've relinquished it to, from the people that we've relinquished it to, from the words that we've relinquished it to. You know, it's so interesting to watch media and social media and celebrity, that people get so offended by a word. You know, women get offended if they are called girls. You know, some Black people get offended if they're called the N-word. See, I mean, that's the power of a word. We're not even allowed to say it for fear it will offend. People get offended, white people get offended because they're called racist. All of these words that we've given our power away to. And then when we get offended, we foist that pain, we project that pain out into the world and say, you've offended me, you must not use that word, and you'd better apologize. Well, it's so interesting to watch the degree of powerlessness there, because a word does not have the ability to hurt you unless two things happen. Number one, you believe what they're saying about you is true. And number two, you give it the power to change you. Right? It's staggering to me how much power we've given away to words, and how our culture as a whole is perpetuating that powerlessness by shaming people for having opinions, for shaming people for having discernment about what they might like or not like, for shaming people in using authentic free speech and speaking their own truth. It is really interesting to watch. And so I want you to make observations in your own world and where you've given your power away to external circumstances, either personal, local, or global, to external words, to people, to things that people may say about you, to you, or not even about you. It's so interesting too to see how people get offended about what people are saying about other people. Like, it doesn't even have anything to do with them and they get offended. And I feel sorry for those people, because I think, my God, your power, you have no relationship with it at all. And if you have the ability to be knocked out of balance by a word, then your relationship with soul and source is going to be virtually impossible to use in any sort of meaningful way. So I invite you to, you know, look back on that playground that we knew as kids, the sticks and stones, you know, of our childhood. And it's true. Sticks and stones may break our bones, but names will never hurt me. Right? The soul, the self gets very offended and takes things personally. The soul does not. The soul does not care if you call it the N-word, or if you call it a bitch, or if you call it a racist. It doesn't care if you call it ugly. It doesn't care if you call it beautiful. It doesn't care if you call it smart. It has no opinion. It gets no validation from the external world. All of its validation comes from its soul nature and from source energy. So you'll know if you are feeling powerless to a situation, a circumstance, a person, place, a thing, or a word, you'll know you're coming from self if that is the situation, right? I like to use this extreme. I say, okay, taking this to extreme. So if later today somebody accused you of being a lying, thieving green frog from Pluto, you would laugh in your face because you know there's absolutely no truth to what they're saying to you. Right? You are such a lying, thieving green frog from Pluto. It's like you'd laugh in your face because you know there is absolutely nothing within you that believes that that is true. Unless you are a lying, thieving green dog from Pluto. But there is no belief energy within you that aligns itself with the statement that was made. So the words have no power. They can't disrupt your peace. Okay. But if there's anything within you that agrees with that, that says, oh, maybe I am a liar or a cheater or a thief. And this relates to shadow work, divine shadow, where we really start to look at it and go, is that true? Is that what I believe about myself? Is that true? And so the reason that they do dismantle us or knock us off our game is, number one, they're hitting self. And number two, they're hitting something that self believes about itself. All right. The only time anybody can get an action or a reaction out of you is because it's hit yourself, it's hit an aspect of self, and it's touched a part of you that believes that that statement was true. If they said you were selfish and that hurt or stung in some way, you have a judgment about what it means to be selfish. If they, you know, if they called you a bitch, then you're carrying a judgment about what it means to be a bitch. And so, you know, there's a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt that says, "No one can make you feel inferior without your consent." Self gives a lot of consent. Soul never does. Okay. So notice where you've given away your power and reclaim it. It's because it's not, the problem isn't the word, the problem isn't the action, the problem isn't the scenario. It's what we believe about ourselves in relation to the word and what we make that word mean. Okay, so if someone calls you an idiot and you know that not to be true, well, don't waste your time being offended. Okay, it's another quote from Dolly Parton, the country singer. She says, "I never get offended if someone calls me a dumb blonde because I know I'm not dumb and I know I'm not blonde." So I want you to really start to evaluate, and coming from your perspective of soul that knows, soul knows its perfection. Soul knows its power. Soul knows its beauty. Soul knows its creativity. Soul knows its resourcefulness. Soul knows its awesomeness. And so as you start to spend more and more time with that aspect of yourself, using the work that we did with the perfected, the prayer of the perfected self, and, you know, centering yourself in that position point of peace and power, that relationship is going to start to come online where you start to know and identify as those things, as you. They will become your being, who you are being, which will shape your doing, which will shape your relationships. Okay. So anytime we feel emotional pain, frustration, aggravation, where we feel a constriction or a tightening in our body, where we are shifting out of peace and power, then we have to realize that we've shifted out of soul and into self, and we're coming from a place of limited conditioning that needs to be reflected on. And all of these strategies can be applied to so that it can be broken apart. So that, you know, our entire goal as mystics is to get to the truth. And here is a really powerful, simple prayer that you can add to your meditative practice. It's really simple and it is so, so powerful. I started using this prayer probably, I don't know, 12 years ago. And my life has changed massively with this very simple prayer. It's 7 words. And it is, "Please continue to show me the truth. Please continue to show me the truth. Please continue to show me the truth." And this is a conversation you are having with yourself, between yourself and your soul and source energy, that you want to know the truth of who you really are. You want to know the truth about what exists in reality outside of you and what it's really made of, and whether or not any of it has any power over you. You want to know the truth about the gifts of your life as it's been presented to you. You want to know the truth of what you are authentically really capable of as a soul. You want to know the truth in all of its power, all of its beauty, all of its richness, all of its poignancy. And when we are more profoundly aligned with truth, then more harmony falls into place. As more harmony falls into place within our inner world, then more harmony starts to express itself in our outer world. And it becomes this self-fulfilling cycle of energy where truth fuels harmony, fuels power, fuels truth, fuels harmony, fuels power, fuels truth, fuels, and it builds and it builds and it builds, and it allows us to maintain and sustain and activate energy as we move up the spiral of our spiritual path. As I've said before, the spiritual path is not a straight line. It is a spiral upwards that continuously supports us in our refinement and growing in greater grace and greater strength and greater joy and greater abundance and greater power. And so if you add, please continue to show me the truth to any of your meditative work, then your soul will come online and will continue to strategize with you as it has through these 10 steps to continue to help you break apart all the limits of self, of old self. It will continue to help you unkink your energetic hose that links you to that eternal flow of source energy. It will continue to support you and guide you and show you really powerfully where you authentically stand. It will bring the truth and it'll flash it in your face. And when it does, especially if it's a challenging situation, that's when you as a mystic go, okay, I see. I asked to be shown this, and I am strong enough, I'm brave enough, and I have all of the tools at my and resources at my hand now to be able to transform this now. And I will say yes. One of the most powerful words that we have in our mystical vocabulary is the word yes. I say yes to this transformation. I say yes to this work, and I call in the power of my soul from this position point of peace and power, and I can, I will, and I am transforming this so that I have access to my greater power. So those are the 10 soul strategies. So I encourage you to listen to this again and go through and make little notes and just look at, and all of these strategies feed into one another as a part of the alchemical process. They are all aspects of the alchemical mystical process that we use to break apart the limits of self to give us greater access to source energy so that we can have more energetic resources to transform our spiritual lead into spiritual gold. And so use all of these points and just, you know, lightly reflect, get a cup of tea or a glass of wine and listen to the strategies and make little notes as you listen to them. Go, yeah, I see where my life has done that. I see where my soul used this strategy to get my attention. Oh, yeah, I see it, but I didn't know what to do with it at that time. Okay, now I know what to do. And you can go back into your history and just make little check notes and go, ah, yeah, I see. What decisions did I make about what that meant at that time? How did I relinquish my power to that situation, to the external world, and I gave it away instead of calling it back? Oh, okay. And use all of these strategies to help you see where throughout your entire life your soul has been partnering with you. That at no time, at any time, have you ever been alone or disconnected. You just didn't know what signs to look for. And now you do. So I encourage you to do this little bit of research and take these strategies, not only to use them in your history, but to use them to look at what's going on right now in your present moment, and to keep them as a resource for moving forward when stuff starts to come up, as it always will. As I say, our path is not a straight line, it's a spiral. And so we will revisit these things, and it's a strategy of our soul to help us master our and refine our power so that we can see how far we've come and we can continue to refine our skills, right? You know, a world champion weightlifter does not become a world champion weightlifter by lifting a weight once. A gold medal athlete does not just run their circuit once. A musician does not play a song once. They play it over and over and over again, and they refine and they get better, and they refine and they get better, and they evolve moving up the spiral. So our path is not a straight shot. It's a spiral that moves us up in evolution. So use these strategies to support you in that upward spiral, and you'll start to see where, like I said before, all along you've been supported. And what this will start to do is it'll start to remind you and really start to ingrain a knowing, not just a belief, but a knowing that your soul is there with you right now, always has been, always will be, trying to get your attention, wanting to support you, wanting to lead you. It's been there the whole time. You've just not been listening. And now you know with these strategies how to pay attention, how to listen, how to engage, and how to use the wisdom that is carried in your life that your soul is trying to show you to further your evolution and to further your power. So with that, I hope you enjoyed these strategies, and I hope you had some ahas and some epiphanies. And I hope you also enjoy the little video series of the using alchemy as an additional gift from your soul to celebrate our first year anniversary. Again, it is my great honor and my great privilege to be your teacher, your guide, your mentor at this stage of your spiritual journey, and realize that whether you stay with me for a long time or you only stay with me for a while, that all of the tools that you learn, they're things that you already know. I'm just here to help you remember them and to refine them and to kick you in the butt from time to time to remind you to use them. And so with that, I want to thank you once more for being such a valued part of membership. It means the world to me truly that you appreciate the work and that you find value here and that you've given yourself the gift of this wisdom and that you've dedicated not only your time, but your energetic resources and your financial resources to make this work a part of your life. So I really deeply appreciate all of you and thank you for being a part of our community. I will see you on the live Q&A call coming up this weekend. Our time has changed a little bit. It is at 1 p.m. PS Pacific time this Saturday coming up. If you can't join us live, do email me your questions in advance at contact@simonewright.com and I'll answer them for you on the call. But with that said, my dear ones, thank you again. Happy anniversary. Happy July. I hope you enjoy the videos and the sneak peek behind the scenes in my art studio. And I hope you continue to refine your tools of alchemy and really start to partner with your soul in these meaningful ways and have a bit of fun with it and go, oh, I see where you are, you cheeky monkey. You've been there. Oh, I see. I see. And continue to ask your soul to show you the truth, and you will be rewarded in ways that will continue to surprise and exalt and inspire you as you move forward. So with that said, dear ones, I'll see you on the coaching call on Saturday. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon, and I'll see you on the inside. Bye-bye.